Buying a dental practice will likely be the biggest career move that you make in your life. You want to make sure that you are doing this right. A single mistake could cost you tens of thousands of dollars and potentially waste months of your time. So if I was going to buy a dental practice today, these are the five steps I would first follow. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist. I've bought and sold multiple practices, and I help dentists buy their first practice. The first thing is you're going to need to figure out where you want to live. I have a friend who's this very specialized type of engineer. He develops very specialized pieces of surgical equipment. He was telling me there's literally only like three cities in the entire United States that he can live in. There are three different companies that he can work for, and he has to live where one of those companies are. The awesome thing about being a dentist is literally anywhere that there are people, there's going to be a need for dentists. So you can live anywhere you want to live. You just have to decide where you want to live. Do you like living in a big city? Do you like living in the country? Do you want to live in a suburban area? Do you have a certain city or location that you want to live in, or are you able to be more flexible? The biggest decision you're going to have to make is whether you like to live in the city or you want to live in the country. The best way to think about it is, where do most dentists want to live? If you find a place that a lot of dentists would want to live, it's likely that the practices are going to be more expensive there and the market is going to be more competitive. San Francisco, Denver, Miami, New York, Boston. The types of places that dentists would want to live, there's going to be more competition. Now, if you're willing to move into the middle of nowhere, into like the middle of North Dakota, you potentially could get an incredible deal on a practice. But just looking at the purchase price of a practice is very short-sighted. Your goal is to set yourself up not only to have a profitable practice now, but also to be able to sell that practice later at a profit. This means that it can also be smart to buy a practice in a city because it's going to be easier to sell that practice later. It also means that you're going to have a much easier time finding employees when you're in a city. You're going to have a lot more opportunity to, for instance, hire an associate later as the practice grows. This is also a double-edged sword. Because there are more opportunities for employees in cities, they're going to be asking for more money. You're going to have to pay your employees quite a bit more if you live in a city. Luckily, insurance reimbursement rates are slightly higher in cities, but this doesn't always offset the extra expenses of living in the city. Overall, if you're willing to live anywhere, you're probably going to find the best deals in an area that's somewhere between city and remote, probably a suburban type area that's somewhere in between the two. But ultimately, the great thing about being a dentist is that you can be successful anywhere. You just need to decide where you want to live so that you can start narrowing down your practice purchase options. The second big decision that you're going to have to make is deciding what size of practice you want to buy. The size of practice that you buy is going to have a huge impact on what your day-to-day operations are going to look like. I've been involved with practices that are producing as little as, you know, $400,000 to $500,000 a year, up to $3 to $4 million per year. If you buy a practice that was producing $400,000 versus $4 million, it's going to be very, very different. The strategies that you follow after purchasing one of these practices is going to be very different. Generally, when you're buying a practice, ultimately your goal is going to be to grow the practice. Most dentists are going to be comfortable producing somewhere around $1 million per year. I've seen some produce as much as $2.5 million by themselves. I've seen some dentists that are perfectly happy producing $500,000 a year. But as a solo doctor, the optimal size to aim for is roughly $1 million a year. This means that if you can keep your overhead around 50 to 60%, you're going to be keeping somewhere between $400,000 to $500,000 a year. You can easily do this working 4 days a week, and if you really want, you could probably get down to 3 or 3.5 days. With a practice of this size, you're probably going to want to have 2 hygienists, probably 3 assistants, and probably 3 people at the front desk. You could maybe get by with a few less employees if you do some smart outsourcing, like outsourcing insurance claims and things like that. Likely, if you have a team of this size, you're going to be able to grow it to, you know, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4 million. But once you start getting above the 1.5 million kind of range, that's when you're going to have to start looking at hiring an associate. Most dentists, unless you're just a really hard worker, are going to start to feel a little stressed once you're getting above those types of production numbers by yourself. Once you are willing to hire an associate, if the associate is full-time, you can count on the associate doing about $1 million a year, which means if you do $1 million and the associate does $1 million, that puts you at about a $2 million practice. So once you have an associate in your practice, you then are going to be aiming for your practice to be about $2 million a year in size. Most practices that you find for sale are going to be run by a single doctor. While there are certainly all sorts of different sizes that you can find for sale, the typical practices are either going to be in the $400,000 to $700,000 range or the $700,000 to $1.2 million range. My advice is that because you're planning on growing the practice, you need to decide, do you want to be a solo doctor or do you want to have a group practice where you have associate dentists working along with you? If you want to be a solo doctor, then it can be a great idea to buy a practice that's been producing around $500 a year. This gives you the opportunity to come in and buy a practice and grow it within the first few years and get about to that $1 million range. Your goal should be to try to build equity in this practice. And in order to do that, you're going to need to grow the practice. If you buy a practice that's already at the capacity of one dentist and you don't want to hire an associate, you're going to have a limited potential to grow. Therefore, if I was looking to buy a practice that was producing $800,000 a year or more, then I would start to think about, is this practice going to be a good practice for bringing an associate in? If the practice only has four operatories, that is not a good practice for an associate. Two of those rooms are going to be taken by hygienists, and that'll just leave two rooms for you. Now, I personally don't like to work with less than 3 to 4 rooms because I'll have one room where the patient's getting x-rays, one room where I'm doing some extractions, another room where an assistant is doing an impression for the crown that I'm about to prep. Generally, you as a dentist want to have the availability to have at least 3 to 4 rooms just for yourself. If you buy a practice that only has four operatories, you're already limiting yourself and you're definitely not going to have room to have an associate working alongside you. So a four operatory practice that's producing $800,000 is not the best option. There's certainly options to look at expansion. Maybe you buy the practice, you work there for 2 years, and then you plan on moving across the street to a nicer building that's available. You just want to make sure that when you're negotiating the lease, you don't tie yourself into a 5-10 year lease if you know that this building is not big enough for what you want to do. Generally, unless you're going to be working in an extremely high cost of living area where buildings are just ridiculously expensive, you want to try to have as big of a building as possible. Worst case scenario, you have a few rooms that aren't getting used. You might think you want to be a solo doctor, but then in a couple of years when you start growing, you realize, hey, it would actually be nice to have an associate here working. You might think, well, I only want to work with one hygienist. But guess what? There's going to be a point where maybe your schedule is getting so full and you don't want to do those profies yourself and you're going to want to have a second hygienist. You want to make sure you have a room for that second hygienist or third hygienist. Even if you want a solo practice, try to get the biggest building that you can find. The first practice that I bought had 11 operatories. Did I use all 11 operatories? No. When I bought the practice, it was definitely limited to the size of a single dentist. But as I grew that practice, it started to become a practice that could eventually be used by multiple dentists. And when I went to sell that practice, it definitely was beneficial that I was able to say that it had 11 operatories. Maybe I paid a few $1,000s extra in that first year on rent that I didn't need to, but in the end, it absolutely was worth it to have more operatories. Another thing to consider when looking at both size and location of practices is how appealing this practice would be to a DSO. The DSO model typically works by private equity companies that are managing investments. The goal of these companies is not to do good and provide as much dentistry as possible. The goal of these companies is to make money. Well, there are multiple business models DSOs follow. One of the most common is that they buy dental practices, they package them up, and then they attempt to resell them. DSOs are not dentists, they're companies, and so they have to hire dentists to work at their practices. This means that they are often limited to buying practices that are in cities and in areas that have lots of dentists. I have a friend who runs a small DSO, and he was telling me about how he has some practices that are in cities and some that are out in the country. He has such an easy time finding employees for those city practices, but he has a terrible time trying to fill the country practices. A lot of the dentists that are willing to work for these corporate offices are usually dentists that have just graduated from school. More experienced dentists usually end up buying their own practice. Likely they're not married yet. They don't have a huge friend base. They don't want to move out into the middle of the country where they're going to be all by themselves. They want to be in the city where all the action is happening, where they can make friends, where they can meet a spouse. Most of the dentists I know that are working at DSOs are younger and they're not married. It only takes dentists a few months to a few years working as an associate to realize, hey, I could be making twice as much as I'm making now if I buy my own practice. Why would I be working for someone else making half of what I could be making when I'm doing the same exact work? This is why it's generally a lot more competitive to find a practice for sale in a city versus a rural area. Oftentimes, the DSOs will come in and they'll offer to buy a practice for more than an individual dentist would want to buy it for. While in a rural area, you might be able to buy a practice for 50 to 60% of the previous year's production. In a large city, sometimes this will be 100 to 110, 120% of the previous year's production. It's just that there's more competition, and so the practices are going to be more expensive. As a solo dentist, one strategy you can take is if you want to live in a city, find a smaller practice and then build it up, and then you can sell that to a DSO. The DSOs work by keeping a percentage of the work that's being done by the dentist. If it's a small practice that's only doing $400,000 a year and they know that they're only going to be making $50,000 or $60,000 off of that practice, it's probably not worth it to them. So they're going to be looking at those practices that are doing $1 million, $2 million, where it's going to be easy for them to bring in associates. Most associate dentists are not going to want to work at an office where they're only producing $400,000 a year, because if they're only keeping 25% of that, they're only making $100,000. Once you take into account that they have $50,000, $60,000 a year of student loan payments, that dentist might only be making $30,000 or $40,000 a year to work at that practice. So it just doesn't make sense for an employee to want to work at a practice like that. And the DSOs know this, so they're not going to be trying to buy those practices that are smaller. Especially if you can find an office where the selling dentist has been slowing down, likely doing more large fillings and less crowns, and likely doing smaller procedures. I was working with a client looking at a practice. The previous dentist had not even been taking bite wings. He had been just taking pans, and this was an old blurry pan machine. I guarantee you, when this dentist comes in and maybe they just buy a Nomad and a simple sensor, they're gonna find so much work in that practice. We looked at the production by procedure report for this practice. This dentist had literally just been doing exams and cleanings. He had been doing almost no work on these patients for the last 3 to 4 or 5 years. If you can find a practice like that, that is a gold mine. You could easily come in and likely double or triple the production of that practice in your first, second year. You come in, you buy a practice for $200,000 to $300,000, and within the next 3 to 4 years, that practice is worth $1.2, $1.3, $1.5, $2 million. If you want, at that point, you can sell the practice to another dentist or to a DSO. This could be a kind of situation where you're literally making $1 million in a single year just from the sale of that practice, not to mention the fact that you had been producing, $400,000 in income. You're looking at $1.4 million of income in a single year. This is the kind of thing that you're absolutely never going to be able to do as an associate. It's all about the strategy and thinking through what you want to do and how you want to do it. Get clear on what your goals are, and then when you start to look for practices, you'll be able to find practices that are in the size and in the location of what you're looking for. Once you've gotten clear on where you want to live and what type of practice you're looking to buy, now is the time to let everyone you can find know that you are trying to buy a practice. Sometimes sellers have to be a little bit secretive about the fact that they're selling because they don't want to spook their patients or employees out. But you as a buyer, you need to let literally everyone you can find know that you're trying to buy a practice. I've heard a few dentists say I'm worried that if my employer at my associate job finds out that I'm looking to buy a practice, that I'll be in trouble. Who cares? Your employer is lucky to have you working there as long as you're willing. They're not going to fire you just because you were looking around at practices. The truth is, if they do, great, because then you can find a better job. Now that you understand that you are being underpaid at that job, at your next job, you can negotiate a higher salary. Instead of making 30% of your production, try to get 40. But better yet, maybe by then you'll have found a practice to buy and you don't even need to work for someone else anymore. You can work for yourself. So let everyone know you're trying to buy a practice. Talk to every single practice broker that you can find in your area that potentially could be selling a practice. Look online for practice brokers in your area. Look online for every single practice broker that is anywhere near to where you are and ask them if they have any practices for sale. You want to find every single practice broker that you can. When I was looking for practices, I was talking to 5 or 6 different practice brokers, and then 6 months into the process, I found out that there were like two or three more that I didn't even know existed. Dental practices can sell for as much as $1 million, and practice brokers generally get to keep something like 10% of that sale price. That can be $100,000. There's a huge incentive for these practice brokers to pop up all over the place, because if they can just sell one practice per year, they can be making more money than they'd be making at their previous job as an accountant or whatever they were doing. One of the practice brokers that I was working with, I found because my aunt met them at the hair salon. Literally, there were so many practice brokers in my area that my aunt just happened to meet one of them at a hair salon. She got his card, and then I reached out to him. Because my aunt knew that I was trying to buy a practice, she knew to get the card from that practice broker. So let literally everyone know. Let other dentists know. This is not a secret. You need to reach out to all the dentists in your town and let them know that you're looking to buy. Because, you know, maybe they're about to retire and they're going to offer to let you buy the practice before it even gets into the hands of a practice broker. Maybe they're not planning on selling, but they have a friend that is. If you can find a practice to buy before it even gets into the hands of a practice broker, oftentimes you can get some of the best deals and find some of the best practices. Reach out to all the different dental supply reps for your area. Don't just choose one company, but choose multiple companies, because these dental supply reps are in the practices of various dentists, and they know if a dentist is looking to sell or looking to retire. They might know about someone that you didn't even know about, and they might know about some amazing opportunity that you wouldn't have known about otherwise. Reach out and let as many people as possible know that you're trying to buy a practice. Once you build up a network of practice brokers and other dentists and dental supply reps, you're going to start hearing about practices that are for sale. Now, we already decided where we want to live and what type of practice we want to buy. However, I would still look at every practice that you can. Even if it's a few hours drive away or a type of practice that you don't think you're going to want to buy, I would still look at it. Chances are you're not going to buy the first practice that you see. It's going to be helpful to look at multiple practices and get an idea of what you're looking for. The more practices you can look at, the better. You want to be looking at as many practice documents and practice reports as you can. The more procedure by provider reports you look at, the better you're going to be able to tell when a practice has a favorable ratio of crowns to large amalgam fillings. The more income statements and tax documents you look at, the better you're going to understand how these types of businesses run and what you actually want to be looking for when you find the right practice. You are going to meet some crazy dentists and see some absolutely ridiculous things when you're looking at practices. One of the practices that I looked at, which was just like super weird, was it was a practice where the dentist was living in his dental practice. Downstairs was where he was working, and upstairs was where he was living. And he kept his practice open 24 hours, and he would have patients come in the middle of night with a toothache, and he would come downstairs and work in the middle of the night. Like, it was just a very strange situation. He had actually moved out of this building, I think like a few months ago to a year ago, and he sold some of his books off to another practice. And so by the time I was looking at it, it wasn't really the type of practice that I wanted to buy. But it was still like a really interesting thing to see how different people have run their businesses. Another practice I was looking at, the dentist who was selling was like almost 100 years old. I literally could not believe that this guy was still seeing patients. That's the kind of practice that I'm willing to bet you that there are so many undiagnosed things. Someone who's that old probably doesn't have the type of vision that you as a 30-year-old have. They're probably going to be missing some things that you're going to be able to see. You might be able to find a situation where there are two smaller practices that are close to each other, and you decide it makes sense to buy one, work at it for a few months, and then buy the other one and migrate those patients over and do a merger. You might decide, well, I wasn't originally going to want to live in this area of town or this location, but actually, this is a pretty cool place that I didn't even know about. Maybe you'll find a city that you fall in love with that you didn't know existed. Just look at as many practices as possible. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't cost you anything to go look at these practices. Eventually, you're either going to find the perfect practice, you see it and you're like, I have to buy that practice, or you're not. You're going to have a bunch of different practices and they all have pros and cons, and you're just going to have to decide. Eventually, you're going to have to find a single practice, settle down, and decide this is the practice that I want to buy. Now, once you have found a practice that you want to buy, this is probably the most important step. You want to make sure you assemble a team of advisors, people who have done this before, to help you through the process and make sure you don't make any stupid mistakes. Almost certainly, this is going to be the biggest purchase that you've ever made and likely the biggest purchase that you're ever going to make. The seller of this practice is paying a practice broker something like $50,000 to $100,000 to represent him in this deal. It's likely that this practice broker has sold tens, if not hundreds, of dental practices. This dentist has been working at this practice for potentially 30, 40 years. There are going to be things that you by yourself are not going to notice. This is not a time that you want to try to do things by yourself. Most dentists are only going to be buying one practice, maybe two in their lives. Find a team of advisors that are on your side when you go through this process. Ideally, find a dentist that has gone through this before you. Maybe you have a friend that's recently bought a practice that you can work with. If you don't, no problem. Reach out to me and I'll be that friend that helps you through this process. Make sure you have people that have done this before that know what to look for. You're going to want to have an accountant that's going to help you look over the numbers. I recommend trying to understand as much as you can before buying a practice, but the reality is you're not going to understand as much as an accountant who's been looking at these types of numbers for years and years. Once you become the owner of the practice, you're going to need an accountant to help you prepare your taxes and manage your books. Oftentimes, if you go into the process saying, hey, I'm about to buy this practice and I'm going to need an accountant, the accountant will often be willing to help you look at some of the numbers for free. You can probably find an accountant that's willing to help you out at first, knowing that in the long run, this is going to be a very profitable arrangement. Now, you probably aren't going to be able to send every single practice that you find to an accountant because the accountant is going to run out of time and get exhausted with you. This is where you might want to find someone like me who's able to give a quick glance over those types of documents and help you understand, is this going to be a good practice to buy? We look at it superficially and make sure it's good before we move on to the next steps of where we go really into depth with the numbers. Ideally, someone can do a quick glance at some of the documents and say right off the bat, oh, this is something you should look out for, or oh, hey, this is a good opportunity. If I have the right documents, within 5 minutes just skimming through, I can say, oh, hey, this is potentially a great practice, or hey, you better look out because this line, just something's wrong with that. When you reach out to the practice broker is going to act like, oh, don't worry, I've already looked through the numbers and everything looks good. Don't listen to that practice broker. The practice broker's interest is to get you to buy a practice. The broker only gets paid when that practice sells. And so if they find a dentist that comes along and is inexperienced and doesn't understand what some of the numbers mean, they're likely going to try to make the sale go through. The broker would rather you be by yourself so that they can try to hide things from you. I'm not saying that all brokers are dishonest, but there definitely are brokers that are dishonest. I know because I have met some of them. I have had brokers straight up lie to me, especially when I was first coming out of school and looking at practices. I had some brokers tell me some things that were just absolutely false. But what these brokers didn't realize is that before I was a dentist, I actually worked as an accountant. So I had a pretty decent understanding of tax statements and what some of these numbers meant. I think the time that I worked as an accountant has really changed the way that I look at numbers and businesses since becoming a dentist. But if you don't have experience looking at an income statement, a balance sheet, a statement of cash flow, then you need to be careful because the practice broker does. The practice broker might conveniently forget to mention something that actually was a really important thing to know. If you work with me looking through practices, I have a list of documents that we're going to make sure that you get from the seller before moving on in the process. We're going to be really strict about these documents. We are not going to let them say, oh, I couldn't find that document. They're going to need to find that document because we want to make sure they're not hiding something from us. We are going to make sure that we understand every number and everything about this practice before we make an offer. No practice is going to be perfect. Every practice is going to have some downsides. But the key is to make sure that you understand what those downsides are and make sure that the price that you pay for the practice takes into account an adjustment for those downsides. The practice broker's intention is going to be to have this practice sell as quickly as possible and for as much money as possible. The sooner the practice sells, the sooner the broker gets paid, and the more it sells for, the more money the broker makes. The final member on your team that you're going to want to make sure you hire is a lawyer. Hiring a lawyer can be pretty tricky because lawyers are expensive. Make sure you're not just hiring any lawyer just because this lawyer is a friend of a friend of a family member. Make sure you find a lawyer who has dealt with dental practice transitions before. If you can find a lawyer that'll give you a fixed fee ahead of time, that's generally a pretty good way to go. And ideally, you find a lawyer that's willing to charge you after you've closed on the practice. That way, you can pay the lawyer out of the money you receive from your loan. Depending on where you live, you might need to find a lawyer that understands some of the specific state laws and laws for your area. Don't ask lawyers too many questions, because especially if you're paying them on an hourly basis, don't ask your lawyer too many questions and don't use your lawyer for things that they're not designed to be used for. Before closing on the practice, you're going to have a document called an asset purchase agreement, and this is the legal document that transfers ownership from the seller to you. Now, this is the document that matters. This is the one that you want to absolutely make sure you have a lawyer check over. Now, you can ask your lawyer what his or her opinion is. Sometimes they'll have a pre-made APA that they can just fill in your information, and then that saves them some time. On the first time I tried to buy a practice, it ended up not working out, and I lost quite a bit of money in legal fees. I made the mistake of letting the seller draft the APA, and the seller's lawyer had never done a dental practice transition before. This ended up being a really, really bad thing. Because the seller's lawyer didn't understand the process, there were all sorts of unrealistic things and things that just made absolutely no sense. And so when my lawyer, who had done, I think, like 100 dental practice transitions before, he saw this document and said, "This is trouble, because there's a lot of stuff in here that just makes absolutely no sense. And we're going to have to go back and argue each and every single one of these points with this other lawyer." So my lawyer took the document and he had to go through and cross out like literally more than half the document. He had to like put red lines through, and then he added a whole bunch of different sections. And then the other lawyer came back and they tried to add stuff back and cross stuff out. And it was absolutely a disaster, because this document went back and forth and back and forth. By the time we were done, not only were both sides upset and confused, but the lawyers had been racking up all these fees. It was honestly a nightmare. So you need to be very careful that you don't get into a situation like this. What ended up sealing the deal for me in this is, after I had already gone through the negotiations with this APA document between the two lawyers, I found out that this dentist had sold a practice before, and then he sued the dentist who bought the practice. They had agreed upon a purchase price. The practice had sold. But then like a year later, the seller had found out that the dentist had grown the practice and had been making a lot more money than they expected. And this seller literally sued the dentist, saying, "Well, I think you should pay me more because you've made so much money." The seller obviously ended up losing, because the buyer didn't do anything wrong. The buyer just grew the practice just like any smart dentist would do. But when I found this out, especially after going back and forth so many times with this seller on the purchase price, I decided to just walk away from that deal, because he was just being so difficult to work with, and I was just terrified that he was going to somehow try to sue me or something. To make things worse, the reason why his lawyer was not a dental-specific lawyer is because this dentist was using his son, who was a lawyer, to broker the deal. So I don't know the exact financial arrangement, but I suspect his son was either charging him very little or not charging him at all to do this, but yet I was paying a lawyer to do this. I ended up losing something like $12,000 in legal fees due to this mess. Don't make the mistakes I made by trying to figure this out yourself. If I could go back in time, I would have just hired an advisor from the start who would have been able to look at this and say, "Hey, that's not a good idea to go back and forth this many times on this transaction." In hindsight, I would have just had my lawyer take a look at the document and say, "Hey, this is not going to work." The first time that I got a document back with all those red lines and all these random things added, I would have just said, "Hey, this is not going to work. I'm going to find another practice." Because you're going to waste your time. You're going to waste your money. It's not worth it to try to fight over these types of things. You want to end on a good note with the seller of that practice. When you're buying a practice, as silly as it sounds, the primary thing you're buying when you buy a practice is a good recommendation from the selling doctor to the patients. You want to make sure that those patients are going to stay, and you want to be on good terms with the selling dentist. If the seller is going to try to ask you to do all sorts of unreasonable things, I would just walk away right then. Don't try to fight it and don't try to argue with it, because you're not going to get anywhere. You're just going to end up wasting time. You're going to be wasting money. So ultimately, just don't try to do it alone. Find someone who has experience to help you. You don't know the things you don't know. Learn as much as you can before going into this, but ultimately realize you're still going to have all sorts of things you don't know. So yeah, these are the five things I would do if I was looking to buy a practice today. If you have any questions, leave them in a comment or reach out in an email. I would love to help you look at a practice. If you have some practice reports or documents you want me to take a look at, I'd be happy to set up a call and look through those documents with you. Reach out. This is exciting. You're going to be a practice owner. You're going to own your own business. You're not going to have a boss that's telling you what to do. You're going to get to be in control of your life. And guess what? You're probably going to be making a lot more money than you're making as an associate. Don't wait. Get started right now and find the perfect practice to buy.